Religion did nothing but divide the basic structure before leaving Earth. Life is a test, let me question the universe. And through my research, I felt the joy and the
hurt.
The first
and
the last
and
the last and the first. The basic structure before leaving Earth. Life is a test, let me question the universe. And through my research, I felt the joy and the
hurt. Stimulus and high. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Caulkin Poker.
I stroll through the books of Job to unfold and open Bible instead of hoping on revival. Calling on his name and screaming hallelujah. When he hallelujah, that's how the devil fooled ya. See, look into my eyes, brethren. That's the lies of a reverend. Why should you die to go to heaven? The earth is already in space. The Bible I embrace. A different cast I had to take. I studied to
Cedric Muhammad.
And only arose when I found out that we were the chosen. I deal with the truth and build with the youth and teach my son as he kneels on the stoop. Son, life is a pool of sin, corrupted with foolish men and women with wicked minds who build picket signs. The legalized abortion, the evil eye extortion. I quit some with my wisdom. Before I converted, I was perverted, and knowledge was asserted. The study of wisdom, I preferred it. The understanding, it gave me mental freedom. I even learned Caucasian, but really, the tribe of Edom. The white
Cedric Muhammad.
It's really Caesar Borgia, and the second son of Pope Alexander, the sixth of Rome. And once the picture was shown, that's how the devils tricked my dome. I prophesied to save a man, but no one gave a damn. From my nation, the seed of Abraham.
Cedric Muhammad.
Now we strung our needles, and some are plunging evil. So study and be wise in these days of darkness. Peace to my nephew Marcus. The basic structure before leaving Earth. Life is a test, let me question the universe.
Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program. Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Only on the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program. Cedric Muhammad.
Well, the US President Barack Obama is about to make his first address to the United Nations. Obama, who's suffering a slump in approval ratings at home, is expected to use the opportunity to highlight the distance between his policies and those of his predecessor George W. Bush. Although credited with having healed the rift between Washington and the rest of the world, Obama is struggling to deliver in several key areas, among them securing support for the war in Afghanistan, making concrete gains on the Middle East peace process, and pressuring Iran into halting its nuclear program. Well, let's get the details now. Nathan King joins me from New York. Nathan, despite the setbacks, Obama is expected to receive a warm welcome at the UN this Wednesday.
Oh, absolutely. He will receive a standing ovation, I should expect, probably before and at the end of his speech. You know, there's a huge sigh of relief around the UN that the Bush days are over. There was no secret that they didn't like the policies of George W. Bush, especially over Iraq, less so over Afghanistan. And they didn't like a couple of his ambassadors either. John Bolton was very brusque. He did not like the diplomatic niceties of the UN, and so no one really misses him. But there is also a cold reality, you know, here. They understand that a lot of American foreign policy discussion stops at the water's edge, that there is actually more that unites Democrats and Republicans when it comes to foreign policy than most people realize. And also there's a growing disquiet, as you mentioned, over several of key policies. And key here is Afghanistan. You know, Iraq seems to be winding down, but Afghanistan seems to be winding up. And the mission there is not yet clear. Do we really need another 21,000 troops there, U.S. troops? Do we need perhaps tens of thousands of more, as McChrystal, the force commander on the ground, suggested in a report that was leaked this week? And there is a real feeling here that this could become another Iraq where you escalate the troops but don't necessarily have an exit plan. Also, the fact is that President Obama hasn't really decided on his strategy yet. His vice president, Biden, is known for actually wanting to pull down troops and focus largely on Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in the tribal areas of Pakistan. That's where, of course, we still suspect Osama bin Laden is. So there's a lot of debate within the administration. So that means they can't lay out a clear policy goal here at the United Nations in a speech. He'll probably thank nations that have come together, but also the United Nations realizes that this is not a United Nations operation. If you go to Afghanistan, there is not a huge amount of UN presence. It's a NATO operation. And this reminds the world that even though the rhetoric may be pro-United Nations in this speech, when it comes to actually acting, the Americans like coalitions. They like NATO because they have a big voice there. They are increasingly bringing about ad hoc arrangements when it comes to different incursions into different areas, and don't like the idea of going through the Security Council because, as you know, Russia and China have the veto, and things can happen at a sometimes glacial pace here. Remember when we went back to the lead up to the Iraq war and the search for a second resolution that frustrated the Bush administration. So there is this feeling here that even though the tone may change in the speech, and that is very welcome indeed, the substance may not. But they have done some concrete things, the Obama administration, since coming into office. For example, they joined the much maligned Human Rights Council. They were actually very involved in the replacement of the Human Rights Commission for the council, streamlined, but they didn't join it in the end because they didn't think they went far enough. Well, under one of the first acts of the Obama administration was to come back onto the Human Rights Council. They gave a very strong speech about working together in the council and reforming it from within. And they've signed quite a few UN treaties, including wide-ranging treaties on disabilities, for example.
All right, Nathan King in New York, many thanks.
Cedric Muhammad, Black Coffee Program, September 23rd, 2009. Brother Muammar Gaddafi is officially finished. Two-hour speech almost. Big day today. Let me show it to you. Hold on, I got it. Volume 1, The Entrepreneurial Secret, exclusive. I'm the only one that has a copy right now. The bootleggers don't even have it yet. I hope the bootleggers will get it soon. That's my book. It's finished. These are real pages with real words. Hold on. Some of you accusing me of making props, but hold on. Volume 1 you just had in front of you. Volume 2 was The Business Principles. That's where I deal with things like negotiation, some of my Wu-Tang stories, standardizing your business, building power. And you all have heard me using the word etiquette, which I think President Obama models very well. Very important. Social etiquette. Now, my mother, she learned social etiquette in Jamaica. Her aunt and her uncle taught her. And you'll see a lot of times Americans don't know how to conduct themselves abroad at a social event. It's because we're not really taught etiquette. We're not even taught to learn the customs of the culture that we are operating within. Article in today's Financial Times. Let me hold it out there. Can you read that? You can't read it anyway. Leaders who use charm to reach the top. Now, Barack Obama is one such leader. Now, let me hold this up, man. One-man show over here. Leaders who use charm to reach the top. Today's Financial Times, that is the Peach Paper. September 23rd, written by Luke Johnson. He has a column in Financial Times called The Entrepreneur. Now, this article would bode well, would dovetail with content in Volume 2 of my book, which you are seeing right there, The Entrepreneurial Secret. Let me read this. Yes, I have red, white, and blue on today, and a Kenya hat. I'm covering my bases with the Americans and the Bloods and the Crips. Newark, Brick City, we'll talk about that hour number 3. Humor and charm are a surprisingly powerful combination as a means of ascent in life. Again, we're reading the article from Luke Johnson, Leaders Who Use Charm to Reach the Top. I'm going to get to Muammar Gaddafi's speech in a minute. Brother Gaddafi. I have met a number of entrepreneurs who have built fortunes on the back of their wit and general popularity, and not much else. They disarm us with self-depreciation, and we enjoy their company. So why wouldn't we want to do business with them? Of course, it all has to be done well. Sycophancy and flat jokes do not weave the same spell. The British feel that some light relief amid the drudgery is essential for existence to be tolerable. It seems to be a cornerstone of our psychology and culture. In London, to say someone has no sense of humor is to condemn them utterly. Now, I mean, what is the missing ingredient in most partisan political discussions? It's no humor. Everybody has got their ice grill face on, battling one another to make a point. No sense of humor. I have to laugh. In London, to say someone has no sense of humor is to condemn them utterly. Many important meetings I attend start with a little friendly banter to break the ice, a ritual to remind us that we are all human rather than simply robots of commerce. I am sure foreigners must think our levity is baffling. Now that word levity, by the way, this is an aside. I gotta keep the Muslims happy. Hold on, this is for the Muslims. Did you all read in the Quran when you were doing your readings? Eid Mubarak, by the way. That Pharaoh incited the Egyptians with levity. Pharaoh used levity. Look up that word. Pharaoh used levity. L-E-V-I-T-Y. Okay, back to everyone else. I am sure that foreigners must think our levity is baffling. My defense is that Brits subscribe to Horace's view. A jest often decides matters of importance more effectively and happily than seriousness. Some years ago, a partner of mine practiced what I called management by laughter. He motivated and inspired by making the atmosphere at work fun, rather than the bullying and intimidation common in many workplaces. I have many corporate thugging listeners. I have corporate sharecroppers and corporate thugs that listen to this program. Do you all have a sense of humor? Charm. Use charm to reach the top, not other things. Some years ago, a partner of mine practiced what I called management by laughter. He motivated and inspired by making the atmosphere at work fun, rather than the bullying and intimidation common in many workplaces. Now, in business, being likable is very important. In politics, people say that you're being a fraud. But the 21st century office can be a minefield for the amateur who enjoys a giggle. I was recently warned about a trap being sprung by a professional gang from Eastern Europe. They plant an attractive female staff member in an organization, and at roughly the same time, a male conspirator also gets a job. The connection between them is unknown to the employer. After a little while, he sends a series of highly suggestive internet jokes to the pretty female. She complains of harassment and threatens to bring an embarrassing employment tribunal involving sexual discrimination. And once she reveals that she has hired expert legal advisors and PR agents, the victim business settles quickly. In these litigious, politically correct times, the perils of making cheap gags can be considerable. Recently, I attended a dinner at a trade conference. The speaker was a well-known executive who told a number of jokes in poor taste. This is why you need Volume 2, or the hottest book that's not out yet, October 7th, The Entrepreneurial Secret, Volume 2, The Business Principles. We have a chapter on etiquette. In these litigious, that means a lot of lawsuits, politically correct times, the perils of making cheap gags can be considerable. Recently, I attended a dinner at a trade conference, and the speaker was a well-known executive who told a number of jokes in poor taste, some at the expense of the influential figures in the room. Just as a vulgar best man speech at a wedding can strike the wrong note, so I sensed as we chatted after the speech that the jibes would not be swiftly forgotten. Someone once said, brains, integrity, and force may be all very well, but what you need today is charm. Charm. This is the age of celebrity, even in the boardroom, and none of us is impervious to the presence of these legendary characters when they switch on the full blast of their glittering personality. Perhaps it is their reputation, perhaps their smile, perhaps their brilliance with words, or possibly their rapt attention. You know, when a person goes like this, and they faking it. I see you all. I am often struck how often young children utter the phrase, look at me. They want appreciation and fundamentally not much changes, even when we are 50. Genuine approval from the boss can taste better than anything, even a pay raise. This is why I have been talking about the great Ed McMahon. I told you all, Ed McMahon is the poster child, the late Ed McMahon, for subordination. Subordination is a business skill. It doesn't mean you're a slave or you are becoming inferior to someone just to submit yourself or downplay your personality or your ego in order for them to gain some sense of honor. Let me tell you how Ed McMahon explained it. Listen up.
I want to thank the gentleman who shared this.
This is Johnny Carson thanking the man who subordinated himself to him for decades.
I want to thank the gentleman who shared this stage with me for 30 years, Mr. Ed McMahon.
That whole idea, hook your wagon to a star. I really hooked my wagon to a star, and it was wonderful.
Ed McMahon had no problem being second fiddle. It worked for him. Again, Volume 2, you learn all about subordination. Let me read that last part again. Because some people, I have a friend. She will remain nameless. She may be listening. I have a friend who does not, and Rod Ginyard, Culver City, California, brother, I'm coming for you on this too. I have a friend. She does not like Twitter because Twitter calls people followers. Now, come on. If you had this same kind of hang up, I'm going to do a special show for you. Not today. The fact that Twitter uses the word followers is keeping people from tweeting. Now, I think that if you have an enlightened self-interest and you don't mind a public experience, there is a way to use Twitter. I'm trying to find it myself. That's more business oriented. Even with my show on Facebook, people that are my personal friends will not be fans of my show because they don't want to be considered fans of me. Do I need to not do Muammar Gaddafi's speech and talk about this? Let me spend 2 minutes on this and we'll get to the great leader of Libya. I actually have friends. Let me put some drums on this. I actually have friends who they love me. Some of them may be listening. They like me. They love me. They have a problem joining my fan page on Facebook because you're called a fan. So if you want to join the Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program page, you have to become a fan. Some people trip over that. I'm not becoming no fan of Cedric. I'm not a fan. We got to get over that, man. If you want to support me, show some support. I'll become a fan of yours. I don't care. All right. That's a different hang up than the Twitter follower thing. The Twitter follower thing I'm open to hearing more about. Anyway, this article, again, leaders who use charm to reach the top. President Obama has used charm. Any great leader has used charm. You think Muammar Gaddafi is in the position he's in because he goes around beating people up? Please. Here we go. I am often struck how often young children utter the phrase, look at me. They want appreciation and fundamentally not much changes, even when we are 50. Genuine approval from the boss can taste better than anything, even a pay raise. Are charm and a sense of humor acquired traits? They certainly improve with effort and practice. Ronald Reagan used his years in showbiz to hone his performance skills before succeeding in politics. I have sat with stand-up comics before they go on stage. The most brilliant appear almost nonchalant rather than rehearsed or anxious, and their acts are mostly learnt, word perfect yet appear spontaneous. So it is with outstanding business leaders who persuade their teams to laugh and try harder. They apply themselves assiduously to the task. Most world-class chief executives possess charisma. Woo, hold on. I gotta pick up my book again. One of the five forms of power, charisma, in my book, The Entrepreneurial Secret, Chapter 6. Most world-class chief executives possess charisma, really a captivating blend of charm and wit. And believe me, they grasp at it far more than they admit. Now, there was a member of the Wu-Tang family who had, to this day, their whole program is charisma. I write about them in my book. Anyway, let me read your comments. I'll show you the article again. Today's Financial Times, the Peach Paper. Hold on, I'm a little off center. Leaders who use charm to reach the top. I got that David Robinson NBA Hall of Fame speech. You know what? Let me take a break, and we'll come back with leader Muammar Gaddafi with an unusual speech today at the UN. The translators could not even keep up. I had to go through four networks before I found a halfway decent translator. Translators being left behind by Muammar Gaddafi of Libya. We'll be right back. Go tell somebody. A lot of people tuning in. Drive my numbers up. I'm going to talk about Tavis Smiley in a minute. I don't care who Tavis is stopping as a sponsor of his program. I want to know, where are the black-owned banks? When will the activist community force black businesses to advertise on black media outlets? How's that? Rather than protesting to get other people off a sponsors list, why not put a sponsor list on? Just a thought. I don't know. September 23rd, 2009, CedricMuhammad.com. I got a message. Someone said, Cedric, if they are truly your friend, then they should want to be your number one fan. How nice is that? Or as Jay-Z might say, how real is that? How real is that? I'm a fan. Brother Charles and I are fans of all black people and all people who have of all colors who have something interesting to say. We have promoted at blackelectorate.com over 130,000 articles. We could not have done that if we were not willing to subordinate ourselves to lift up other people. Nothing personal. I've had and we've had this discussion before. There are columnists who secretly, they just privately get word to Charles and I that they want us to link to their articles. Never have quoted me, never have linked to us, because we don't do it for it to be reciprocated. So we are willing to subordinate ourselves to anybody who has a thoughtful point of view without looking for something in return. So I'm a fan of Glenn from Philly. I'm a fan of Rod from California. I'm definitely a fan of Tasha from Miami's. I mean, is it that hard to just show love? It's an endearing quality in business. So my book, I have a chapter on networking and etiquette. I use an example, some lessons I learned when I was with Wu-Tang. And I have a discussion with my business mentor about etiquette and networking. One of the best things you could do at a public gathering, you're trying to get the attention of someone very important and they are crowded and there's not enough room for you to get to them with a comment without interrupting or breaking the line or inserting yourself in a rude manner, one of the best things you could do is look at what they may be drinking and come and offer them a beverage. Say, oh, I see that you are busy. It looks like your drink may need to be freshened. And even if they think you're trying to poison them, you got their attention. This is what I'm saying when I talk about Barack Obama. I'm not going to go and just look at him as a progressive or a Pan-Africanist, which I am, both, or just policy-oriented. I have to look beyond talking points that come from a think tank and look at what's really happening. The man is making people more articulate. He's changing people's demeanor. People even are walking differently. I'm even a fan of that page. Unsolved Mysteries scared the ish out of me when I was a child. There is a group on Facebook. Unsolved Mysteries used to scare the ish out of me when I was a child. I became a fan of that group. All right, let's go to the leader, really a chairman of the African Union. We can start right there. Why is this the first time the American public is really hearing Muammar Gaddafi? Is it just because this is the first time he's been able to come to America? Or is it something else going on? Now, I can't do the whole 2 hours. Brother Gaddafi can flow. But I'm going to give you a little taste. You will note that even the translators had a hard time catching up to him. He had a lot to say. He critiqued the UN. He critiqued the UN from a historical standpoint. He critiqued President Obama's speech. He did not hold back. Now, how could a man be in power for 40 years if he was this caricature that they've made him out to be? And I want to hear from all the Ahmadinejad and Castro lovers. Has there ever been a more gangster, revolutionary speech? A bit long. But what is it with Muammar Gaddafi that the Ahmadinejad supporters and the Fidel Castro, Hugo Chavez lovers, you don't want to even acknowledge him? 40 years of putting it down, supporting the IRA. Nelson Mandela, I believe, named a son after Muammar Gaddafi. As Jigga would say, how real is that? Speak to us.
This is swine virus may be one of those viruses that was created in the laboratory and it got out of control because it was meant in the beginning to be used as a military weapon as well as the military, the nuclear proliferations as well as the hypocrisy, the deteriorations and the control of the legitimate, the money-wise, dear brothers. And as you know, that the United Nations was established and founded by three countries against the German at the time. The United Nations that we have today is different, but the United Nations the countries or the nations that were come together against Germany during the Second World War. These countries constitute a council named after Security Councils and gave member states to its own members and granted the veto. We were not present at the time. And the United Nations was tailored according to these three countries and wanted from us to wear the clothes or the suit that was tailored against Germany. This is the real substance and contents of the United Nations as it was founded 40 years or 60 years ago. This was happened during the absence of over 165 countries. The ratio is 1 of 8, and one was present and 8 were absent. Those they created or they made the charter, and you know I have the charter, a copy of it. And once you read the charter of the United Nations, the preamble of the United Nations is different from the provisions and the articles. How this came to existence, those who attended in San Francisco in 1945, they all participated in the preamble, but they left the articles and the provisions and the procedures of the tell the Bashir of the Security Council, or the so-called Security Council, they left it to the job of the experts and the countries who are interested, which are the countries who created the Security Councils, which countries came together and acted against Germany. The preamble is very tempting, and no one is objecting to the preamble, but everything that came after that is completely in contradiction with the preamble. This is what we have now, this is what we are rejecting, and we shall never continue with it. This came to an end during the Second World War.
Cedric Mohammed.